Good afternoon, and welcome to We the People Radio. That introduction you heard was just that moment of silence.
I forgot to sing. Play my guitar.
Could have hummed a few bars, but yeah, we're better off talking. So, let's see. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundiff.
We're no good without the music.
Yeah. What do I do? Annie M, Annie M.
I'm doing this for like nine years. I can't figure out what to do. And we do have a sponsor.
Yes, we do. Our sponsor today is Pape Machinery. Pape Machinery is the local John Deere ag and turf dealer for the area. And anything you want in the way of tractors or lawn equipment, go up and see them. They're at 3119 Twinview Boulevard in Shasta Lake, just south of Phil's Propeller. Everybody knows where that is. But yeah, they can take care of you with any of that stuff, parts, service, and they work on all makes. So don't be afraid to take anything else in there. Those guys are pretty knowledgeable. They can work on anything. And you can reach them on the phone at 226-9226 or get them on the web at papemachinery.com.
Ta-da! Doesn't help that we've been staying up really late and had a really busy weekend, so now we sound all sleepy. And it's been raining, so you know, can't go wrong there. Got a little sleepiness. We're talking about China today, though. Anything but sleepy. Carrying on our conversation that we had with Dr. Chen and his friend, Mr. Eureka Young, last week, and we thought, you know, it's always bad when we have two people on because, of course, they only get to each do half the talking. So we thought we would have Eureka Young come on this week and give us kind of the rest of the story. He has sent me an updated bio, so a little bit of extra information. You can find everything about the show, I kind of forgot that part, at wethepeopleradio.us, and you have archives of all of our past programs for the last 9 years. I was thinking it was 10, but it's actually 9. We're like 1 year behind how long KCNR has been here.
I thought it was 2009.
Yeah, I guess it was 2010. Go figure. I went back and looked at our own archives. It was pretty easy to figure out if I just looked at the website we maintain. Sad. But anyway, we've got topics going back. We were chatting with someone last night about all these different people that have been on and all the different topics. And it's like, oh, yeah, I forgot about that guy. Oh, I forgot about that lady. Lots of interesting stuff. And most of that information is still relevant because it was not not necessarily local. Most of it's national or worldwide type issues. So we've created tabs at the top, actually.
So you're saying nothing much has changed in the last 9 years?
Well, I mean, information's information, right? So if people come on who are experts in their subject, they're still experts in their subject, and most of that's still there. So we've done I've kind of reorganized the website in the sense that I've made it a little easier for you to find things in the archives if they're under a topic header. So shows we've done on veterans issues, South Africa, China, Islam, environmentalism, marijuana, those I've made tabs for at the top and called out all the programs and listed them there so you don't have to scroll and scroll and scroll. And if you have a particular topic you would like to find and don't want to scroll and scroll, just email us and let us know. You can find all of our contact information at wethepeopleradio.us. So there we go. All the little business end there. So our guest this entire show, actually, is Eureka Young. He came to the United States from China as a college student in 1988. I'm kind of hoping we hear more about that. You know, what happened when you came here? What was it like? What did you think? All that. And then after graduate school, he worked in a Booz Allen Hamilton spinoff whose search engine was deployed among leading enterprises and government agencies. First as a kernel engineer. Good thing we're not talking about that because we don't really know. I don't know about Bill, but I don't really know what that is exactly. And later as an independent consultant, Mr. Young handled high availability and high throughput information needs of clients worldwide, including financial news profiling at Dow Jones, built-in information retrieval features at Adobe Acrobat and Lotus Notes, interest rates announced by Mexico Central Bank and corporate solutions by London-based consulting firm Accenture. So kind of it's a little bit like
Yeah.
It's a little bit like Dr. Chen's bio. You know, you get into the microbiology, it's like, oh, good, we're not talking about that. He continued his career in real-time information processing after the search engine company was acquired by a UK-based Autonomy, which in turn was acquired by HP. Currently works at a major financial services company. Since 2012, Mr. Young has provided research, analysis, and other services to private investors and not-for-profit organizations covering macroeconomic and geopolitical topics in U.S.-China relations. So with all the stuff I'm going to say we hear a lot about China, but we don't hear much detail, and we don't learn a tremendous amount from what we're being told. So last week, if you're interested in the backstory on what is happening in Hong Kong and a little bit more of a in-depth analysis of what's happening there, we did that last week. This is December the 8th, 2019, when we're airing this live. So if you look at December 1st or look under the China tab, you'll find that. So, Eureka.
Hi, good afternoon, Aaron. Good afternoon, Bill.
And you sound really good this week. Yep. It's always hard when we have two people on because one of you is always loud and one of you is always soft, so it's kind of fun. You're the only person on this week. Hey, before we, you know, we always run out of time on all this stuff, but I'm always so curious because your stories are all very different, those of you who have come here from China and stayed here. How did that wind up happening? And I'm always interested to know, when you came here, were you surprised by what it was like here? Like, I know Dr. Chen had said that his story was amazing. He talked about looking up at the moon and realizing that the moon was brighter in other countries and that they had been lying to him in China. Like,
yes, I was surprised. When I was a kid, there were these movies about the Korean War.
Uh-huh.
We call that anti-U.S. war, and in support of North Koreans. In the movies, whenever South Korean army commanders and the U.S. U.S. officials, when they showed up, the lights will turn green. So I thought all the Americans are kind of green-faced. And when I came here, they're all really bright and upbeat. So it was quite different.
We weren't green-faced. Oh, my gosh, how interesting. And so that's pretty funny, actually. So when you came here, why did you come here in 1988? Like, I know you were a college student, but...
Yeah. 1980s was a decade when China was gradually opening up. And it was one of the decades after the communists took over that they started to build up good relationship with the United States. And in 1984, that was my last year in high school, President Ronald Reagan came to visit China. And he delivered a speech in one of the top universities in China. I was studying in Shanghai, and that university, not the one that I later went to, but I think that was the number one university that President Reagan went to. He delivered a speech, and in the speech, he spoke directly to Chinese people about what America stands for and what who Americans are. Like he said, Americans are a fair-minded people, are sympathetic people, are an optimistic people, and after the Second World War, America helped not only rebuild our allies, we helped rebuild our enemies as well, because their people are victims of bad policies and bad governments. So all these are something that I've never heard of. All I knew was, like, America had been bad all along for centuries. It was the number one, like, foreign power that led foreign invasions into China. So since 1984, I started, like, paying more attention to anything related to America. And so with the more I found out about America. And there were every now and then a few Americans in China, although they were not green-faced. So I thought they were more like the exception because they came to China.
Because they didn't get the right tip.
Right. I did meet a few of them because China was opening up. And I came to aspire, like many young young kids back then, we aspired on America's like modern society, America's like leadership in the world. So with that, I applied for college. I transferred my college credits and tried to come to the United States to continue my study here.
Right.
Wow. Well, we've got to take a really quick break, and then we're going to come back. I'm going to go check Bill for green pigment.
Yeah, my makeup is...
I'm not kidding you. That is my favorite question to ask people who have come here to live from China. It's like, what did you think was going to happen, and what does it look like? Because we always get something we don't expect and nothing we could ever guess. The real answers are always better than anything we could make up. Anyway, you are listening to We the People. And you can find us online at wethepeopleradio.us.
What shall we do about them? When they move into your neighborhood, they take over but good. They want you all body and soul. Then it's just your body. Then they go. What shall we do about them?
Sonic man out of you. Don't stop me now.
I'm having such a good time. I'm having a ball.
Don't stop me now.
If you wanna have a good time, just give me a call.
Don't stop me now.
I'm having a good time.
Don't stop me
yes,
now.
I'm having a good time. I don't wanna stop at all.
I thought we should play that early because we don't have to stop for like an hour
That's
and 45
right.
minutes. Okay, so our green pigment quotient is very low.
Yep.
Tell me this. When you came here and you... Well, anyway, go back to your story. I have questions.
Yeah. All right. the day that President Reagan arrived in Shanghai, I was preparing for a college enrollment exam. And we went to school for the first half of the day, and the second half was like for home study. So I went home, and I had to... run a household chore to downtown area in Shanghai, and the roads were blocked, and this is usually when there was like foreign dignitaries. There were foreign dignitaries, important like VIPs are visiting. That's when the police would block the road. So I was blocked, and I saw the motorcade. And later I went home. I learned that. I knew that President Reagan was in Beijing, China's capital, and so I thought it could be President Reagan's motorcade, and it turned out it was from news. But we were not, people in China, we were not told that when and where President Reagan was going to deliver a speech. I didn't find out how, the second day I looked at the newspaper, and the talk wasn't like it was in excerpts, and it only published what was good and the thought would help the Chinese government to better advance its agenda rather than the full transcript from U.S. president's speech. So a few weeks later, the high school that I was enrolled in, the English teacher, she is a Christian. And she gave me the full recording of President Reagan's speech, so I listened to it. I couldn't understand each and every word. I was far from understanding all the words. So later on, she found the transcript, so I was able to compare the transcript and listening to the tape. And back then, it was cassette tapes. Slowly, I started to understand the depth and the breadth in President Reagan's speech. So I paid, it was like eye-opening. And when I got enrolled into the college, which was also, which has a long history, was one of the very old colleges in China, there was a good library. So I went into the library, started to dig out more on the United States. And I found a memoir by President Richard Nixon, and in his memoir, he explained when the U.S. president visited countries behind the Iron Curtain, the United States advance team would make arrangements for the president to deliver a speech directly to people behind the Iron Curtain. So it was 1984, and President Reagan followed that protocol. But the communist government had ways to work around that, right? Although they allowed to televise the to broadcast and televise the speech, but they wouldn't tell Chinese people, and they wouldn't offer Chinese interpretation. Very few people in China could understand English.
Oh, no subtitles or anything.
They were trying to reduce the impact, but they still have to meet. They back then, they still honored their kind of international commitment. And things got worse. As you were saying, you have 9-10 years of records. And it is in these past 9-10 years, especially after the year 2009, after the credit crisis in the United States, among the Chinese leadership, they thought now it was China's turn, right, to overtake United States. So a lot of their foreign policies and a lot of their business and trade practices got more and more assertive. So that was like a story that took place later. But back in 1984, so I got enrolled in this college, and I started to learn more about the United States and to learn about media censorship and all that. And but China was still on a good trend. It was opening up, and one of my schoolmates, he was one of the top students in his class. And he was in the same university that I was in. And since it's an old university founded back in 1896, back in 1980s, we call 1896 and 1900, we call that the turn of the century. So it was about 100 years, now nearly 120 years ago. Back then it was close to 100 years ago. So the policy was the university that we went to, was well established. It had connections with the top Chinese leadership, and we had students just like Dr. Chen from another his university. I believe was a top university in China, and in our university, this schoolmate of mine, he was selected by the English department that he went to. He was enrolled in. He was selected to go to Italy to study European culture as well as language. So he went there and he came back, and he was invited to teach, offered the job to teach in our university. That was a very prestigious position. But also, since China was opening up, Coca-Cola came to Shanghai. It was building up a bottling factory, factories, just as we often heard that we're building bottling factories in Mexico. So in mid-1980s, Coca-Cola was building up a factory in China. And so they were trying to recruit my schoolmate. His name, James, he was a few years older than me. And we later came to know each other in Silicon Valley when I worked in the Booz Allen Hamilton spinoff. He was working briefly in Apple as manager for Palm Pilot, late 90s. Yeah, he was the product manager for that. So we got quite close. So he told me his story. So Coca-Cola was trying to recruit him, but the university we went to, Jiao Tong University in Shanghai, refused to release him because they thought we spent money, although it's not the university's money. It's Chinese government's money. But they had everybody in China. Back then, we had a dossier the government compiled on us, where you went, what your political inclination is. It had everything in it. So as long as this dossier wasn't released by the university, he wouldn't be able to go to Coca-Cola. But somehow, Coca-Cola and the municipality, Shanghai is a municipality directly reporting to the central government, they had connections, so they were able to get close to Premier Zhao Ziyang. Premier Zhao was the leader who was toppled in 1989 during the June 4th crackdown on student protesters. So Premier Zhao was open-minded. He visited the U.S. early in 1984, and Ronald Reagan visited China, like in return, like at the invitation for Premier Zhao. Premier Zhao said, we are really at a time of opening up. Officials need to change their mindset and adjust their attitudes towards this like narrow-mindedness of like the company or the university would be dictating the career of its employees, right? We really should like allow free movement of capital and talent. So Premier Zhao gave this general like he didn't comment on this specific case, though the question raised was whether Coca-Cola should be allowed to recruit this someone without the dossier, right, the whole dossier compiled on him. So upon learning Premier Zhao's comment, the university released the dossier, so my friend went over to work at Coca-Cola. So it was just a very small position, very low position, but it took the Prime Minister of China to make a comment before this could take place. So that was how close the society was, even back then, even just 35 years ago.
Well, when one thing I've never really thought about it, but one thing that we've never asked, when someone left like that, he went to work for Coca-Cola, you knew him then, did you get to have any communication with him after that?
He left Coca-Cola for the United States. I met with him in Silicon Valley.
Oh.
And he was Catholic. And then I stayed as a friend with him for quite a few years. And later he went to work at Asia Info, a company in Silicon Valley funded by, I believe, by some Chinese entrepreneurs. Then at one time, he invited me to interview. They were considering investing in search engine. And the Baidu in China, which does a lot of bad things lately, they were thinking about investing in Baidu. So they asked me to evaluate whether Baidu's search engine technology was like really on par. Is competitive, is worth investing. After that, he contracted liver cancer. So he passed away at the beginning of 2000s, I think 2002 or so. The last I communicated with her was via email when I was on an overseas trip to Mexico City on a brief errand business trip to Banco de Mexico. That was when I came back. I wasn't in Silicon Valley. I was in upstate New York back then. He passed away, so I sent condolences to his wife. I didn't stay close in touch with his wife.
Mm. I'm always curious if they suppress that communication coming back. Like if people come here and find out they don't have green faces, are you allowed to, you know, call your friends back home and say, hey, you know, guess what I found out when I was over here? I guess I'm always kind of curious
China
about that
today.
Part.
You mean friends back in China? Today?
Yes. When we come back, tell us about that, especially
sure.
Before we had, you know, really cell phones and email and, you know, easy ways to communicate. I mean, were you allowed to send letters back or, you know, did you ever get news of the outside world? Our guest today is Eureka Young. We're discussing China, and you're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
Sun beat down, I had the radio on, I was driving, trees went by, me and Dale were singing, Little Runaway.
It ain't much I'm asking, I heard him say, gotta find me a future, move out of my way, I want it all.
why not? So, yeah, if anybody who came here, say, prior to your time period, did you ever hear from those folks again?
Yeah, we did. I did lose contact with them for quite some time before internet was widespread in China, and we had only like postal mails.
Right.
We had long distance telephone calls. In late 1980s, that's when I came here. And international calls were super super expensive. The first minute, there are like midnight hours, which was a little cheaper. It's like below $2 a minute for the first minute, maybe below a dollar for the second minute, from the second minute on. But during business hours, the first minute could cost like $4 or so. The second minute could cost $2.
So nobody was calling back and discussing wider geopolitical issues and concepts.
Right. Yeah, we couldn't afford that.
It's like, and, how are you? I'm fine. Okay, bye.
We rarely make phone calls. And also back in China, not each household had phones.
Oh,
it was a privilege.
A
it was only like party officials with certain rank. They could afford, it was the kind of a privilege that they could have phone calls. And everyday people, it was very hard even to apply for one. So it was only till like most recent 20 or so years cellular phone got popular in China. Now a large population, they're using cellular phones. And it was around 2005 or so, 15 years ago or so, I got back in touch with my high school students, and those who told me about, they said they saw President Reagan on TV, but they couldn't understand a thing. So I got reconnected with those people around 2005, and around 2015, I got in touch with college alumni. There were a lot of college alumni who did come out to the United States, so I stayed in touch with them, but not like many others, and I wasn't in close touch with them. So in the past 5 to 10 years, I got back in touch with them. I did stay in touch with them, but not that close. We have this social media app. We call that WeChat. It is known, and it is rather it's a fairly controversial software. They said it's just like a Huawei equipment.
No, so they're
Huawei
listening.
Telephone. Yeah. They said you'd better not use it. If you leave it on or have it installed, it could like eavesdrop or something. But as far as I know, maybe this WeChat software didn't pull bad tricks like that because it's widely popular and it probably could not afford its market share like worldwide. But tons of other Chinese software, people did the research on it, and they do gather information. And there was one TikTok, I believe, very popular music app.
Oh yeah, that's what the kids are all using today. It's very popular.
Yes, and they are sending privacy, like personal information of underage kids back to China, and it is a huge threat to the safety of kids. And there has been investigation into that app, and so now I'm kind of using this WeChat on and off, but I did get a chance to join a few social groups, my close friends who are not on it. Those are rather outspoken social groups. And from those social groups, I learned what many Chinese people are thinking about, like issues in Hong Kong and issues about Huawei. And recently, nowadays, like because of the high pressure from the central government, a lot of not just average people, everyday people, even officials, aren't very happy with the policy, with the censorship, and with this slowing down of economy, and with this trade conflict with the United States. So last week, there was this news breaking out that Huawei is this giant telecommunication company. Huawei employee tried to get his severance package from Huawei, and he got it, but he was jailed for 251 days. And there was this outpouring sympathy toward this employee, and I learned this from social media groups. People are very much outspoken in support of this Huawei employee. And what is sad is when this Huawei employee eventually freed, and he was exonerated, there was no there's no wrongdoing he committed, because Huawei brought him to the court saying he was trying to blackmailing Huawei for compensation. Then somehow they just kept extending the penalty and kept extending investigation, kept finding out more excuses to keep him in custody. Kept him in custody. When he came out, he had to tweet. They're not allowed to use tweet. He basically had to use social media, another different social media, just equivalent to Twitter here. He had to apologize to the CEO of Huawei, saying that, let me see if I have, I wrote down his exact word, so I want to be accurate. He said, "It wasn't my intention to cause so much attention online, and I'm sorry about it." So basically, he, despite his being put in behind the bar for 250 days, after he was released, he still had to apologize under pressure. So this is how dominating this company is, how this company was treating its former employees, and you think it is, it's just a private company. I think it is much more than a private company, right? So I get to learn about events and public opinion through these social media apps.
Yeah, see, we don't have a clue, but honestly, and just for the folks listening, Huawei is spelled Huawei. So when you hear us talk about it, sometimes people are searching it online, and it's not spelled the way it sounds.
Right.
But
people don't know to look for it.
They don't know to look for it, but once you realize that the Huawei is the Huawei that we've been talking about on and off for months now, all of a sudden people are starting to look at some of their electronic devices and realizing that that's the manufacturer. A lot of the, on eBay, I ordered a watch. I didn't really want it to be a watch. It was a O2 measuring thing. And so I was just going to, measure the oxygen content. It also did your blood pressure and some of that. It was $18. It was just a cheesy, nothing you'd wear all day. And I have no intention of following myself all day, so I don't want to hook that up to the internet.
Yeah, it had GPS and all that.
Yeah, it had all this stuff. But you basically couldn't use the thing unless you logged into it online and set it up. And I didn't even want to use those features. So I get into the directions, which is always just a minefield on deals like that. The directions were bigger than the watch. And so I start reading through, and I kind of cut to the back. Huawei. And I was like, "Oh, it's Huawei." "Goodbye, $18. I threw it in the garbage and watched it drive down the street in the garbage truck. But so they're following somebody else now. But creepy. Just creepy. And not
waste management.
Waste management. Not something to be dismissed, actually.
But it is.
They make a lot of
electronic products that you wouldn't even think of. And they're building in this basically spyware that they can follow you around and take all your personal information.
Something to consider. I was having this conversation last night with a friend, and we were talking about a lot of our younger folks, in their 20s and even 30s, and they think nothing of having, the Alexa, or even, folks that are older and haven't really thought about it. And you have these monitoring devices that you voluntarily put in your house because it's going to make your life easier. And I'm thinking, just go shut the lights off yourself. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Well, I work with a fellow who
let Alexa watch all your stuff.
And he was telling me the other day that his daughter was very upset because the power went out and she couldn't get on TikTok. And I said, "Well, what is TikTok?" And he told me about it. I thought, sounds harmless enough. And then I looked into it, and that is a big deal now. people are starting to realize that that software is going to China, or the information gathering is going to China. So, it's everywhere.
Yeah, and unfortunately, we're, in a lot of cases, voluntarily signing up for that. It's something you really need to consider. I hear from quite a few people, oh, well, they don't care what I'm doing. I'm not doing anything bad.
Nobody wants to know.
I'm not doing anything bad, so why does it matter? And, maybe, Eureka, when we come back, maybe you could give us your thoughts on that.
How about everybody in your contact list? Because that went too.
We have a lot of thoughts on that, but I'd be interested to hear your vantage point, especially where you've been and your history there. We're going to come right back. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. Title that Ode to Huawei.
Ode to Huawei.
I'm just going to change it. Every time we do a show about this kind of stuff, I'm like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, the stalker song.
Gotta play that, all the stalker songs. Ugh. So, Eureka, when you, when you talk to people and they, I don't know, maybe they don't tell you this, but I hear it a lot. People say, oh, they're not watching us. And if they were, I'm not doing anything bad.
Actually, it's much more serious than that.
Thank you.
Rarely a month now passes without, like, a case media coverage of a former CIA officer, like, being sentenced for spying for China. So if you dig that out, I studied a few cases. I found out that there is this Social Science Academy of China, and with its affiliated organizations spreading across all the provinces. They were like semi-official and semi kind of like a civilian kind of private organization. And more, they have the facade of like academic like front. They put up this facade, and they were quite active in exchanging scholars and researchers with the United States and with the West in general. And they have been a few cases I noticed, like, their staff would approach former U.S. intelligence officers, and they gathered their information from LinkedIn. So if once they got hold of one guy somehow during his someone who was in financial hardship, they would rather generously giving him a consulting fee and things like that, invite him trips to China, and then imagine his contact list got compromised.
Yeah.
A much wider reach, right? The academy, social right. science academy would be able to reach out to other, former.
And I think that's the part that so many people don't realize is this stuff goes in, gets a hold of your contact list, that automatically gets them in to somebody else's contact list, and it just goes on, and eventually they'll glean some pertinent information. So it's not good.
Yes, especially when someone was under stress, then they would know, his wife was hospitalized, right? Now probably it's like a golden opportunity to reach out to him. So there are all these things. There was in Vice President Mike Pence's speech last October, he mentioned there is this social credit system built in China. Basically, they are monitoring each and every aspect of a person's private and public life. So that would provide like ammunition for them to really breach, to do harm to U.S. national security. So mm-hmm. there is significant implication in that regard.
Yeah. See, and it when you start in with things like that, again, you know, I'm always channeling the naysayers in the back of my mind. I can hear people saying, "What? Well, I haven't done anything wrong." Well, who's setting the standard? I mean, that's where it all goes wrong. Is somebody decides that something that you think is perfectly normal is now unacceptable, and mm-hmm. Now suddenly you. So what happens with the social credit score? Because we've all read things about that. But in real life, what's happening in China with that?
Yeah, from reports that I've heard lately, for someone to... There are checkpoints everywhere, like in airports, in seaports, in high-speed railway stations. And in China has set up a lot of highway checkpoints where, like a toll booth, you have to pay a lot of... They said if you were transporting some goods from southern China to northern China, the cost it's going to cost more than you ship it from China to California.
Wow.
So that's how many toll booths are and how expensive the tolls are. So at each and every such checkpoint, they're going to check your national ID, and if you have nowadays, if you have online like comments, right? If you are pro like Hong Kong people, you're in support of people in Hong Kong who are protesting against their administration, their administrative government. You could be invited to state security offices.
Invited. A little invitation.
Yeah, and whenever the first time you are there, you would be earmarked for, like, scrutiny.
Ew.
So from that point on, it will be hard to go to board a train. It will be hard to go from across the provincial borders. It will be almost next to impossible to go into Beijing, the capital of China. So all these kind of all these records go into the social credit system. It is the same kind of dossier that they had on everyone, like, 35 years ago, only that it is now in electronic system, and it is like instantaneous.
Much easier,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, we're practically handing it to them and not even knowing it.
Yeah, I mean, if you have to go look up paper files, I mean, really, you know, how many people were able to slide through, but now, and if you're carrying a phone, they already know you're there.
Yes, and for the information that... they are gathering. This is just through like we are volunteering the information to the information aggregator. Then there's also this cyber like espionage, right? I wouldn't quote like more conservative publications here, like Fox News. I would quote more like a pro-China camp. I will quote that. I think it is more convincing. I will quote Henry Paulson. He was Secretary of State. He built up a strong personal relationship with leaders of China, and during the credit crisis around 2008 and 2009, he was trying to get financial help, and China did lend a little help back then. So he was on good terms with many Chinese leaders, and after he completed his term, he wrote a memoir. The title of that was Dealing with China, and still he was trying to lower the tension between the two countries. But even so, he admitted that rarely he basically said that there was no executives in any of the Fortune 500 companies that who had not complained to him that their system was breached by Chinese, like by attacks originated from China. So that would include companies like Boeing, right, Lockheed Martin, and would include like government agencies. We saw reports like on Anthem with medical records, with social security numbers, with veteran information. So this is how serious things are.
Wow.
And so, you know, for people in this country who are, you know, taking pictures of every meal they eat and putting it online and every person they've ever met and every thought they've ever had, posting all that online, thinking that that would never be used against them. I don't know if there are still people who believe that, but I look at some of the things people post and it's really, really personal
very, very detailed. Stuff, yeah, you shouldn't be.
Besides
shouldn't
the fact
it's
a huge security issue,
because yeah, it's no different than walking up to a complete stranger on the street and tell
handing
them
your wallet.
Yeah, just hey, yeah, here's my this that my well,
yeah, here's
my
where I live. Here's when I'm when I'm leaving
card
on vacation.
Numbers. Yeah, and I'll be gone these weeks, and come on by.
But how potential? I mean, was there a point in China where people could have kept all this from going online, or was it always kind of a foregone conclusion?
I didn't fully get your question, Aaron, though.
I just look at here in the U.S., people are voluntarily putting all this online. So I guess I'm kind of assuming in China they voluntarily put those things online and then ultimately it came back and worked against them, but maybe that's not how it happened.
Not yet, unless you discuss sensitive issues like Hong Kong. Even the word Hong Kong is now like if you key in that word, then there's even the screening has all been automated thanks to this this big data, right? And thanks to like cloud computing.
Sure.
As long as you do not like participate in discussion like that, people there were live very lively communities. People are discussing about like fashion, this about the food, the gourmet, and all that.
We're gonna come right back. Thank you for staying with us in the second hour. We're gonna come back and start right here. Our guest is Eureka Young. You can find us at WeThePeopleRadio.us. We'll be right back. Afternoon and welcome back to We the People Radio. This is the second hour of our program today on December the 8th, 2019. Just in case we replay it at another time, you'll have some context for what we're discussing. We're talking about China today. So my name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundiff. And our sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery. Pape Machinery is the local John Deere ag and turf dealer. Anything ag, anything turf, go up and see them. They've got quite a bit of product in stock. It's full dealer, part sales and service. So if you've got, something needs to be worked on, go see them out there in the shop and, they can get you fixed up. And they do work on all makes. So, if you have any other brand of tractor, don't be afraid to bring it into them. They've worked on everything. And they're located at 3119 Twin View Boulevard in Shasta Lake City. Look for the big Pape sign, big John Deere sign underneath it, just south of Phil's Propeller. Their phone number is 226-9226, or you can get them on the web at papemachinery.com. So there you go.
And there you have it.
Yeah.
So if you go to WeThePeopleRadio.us, you have years of archives, and our show today will be posted. Actually, it'll be posted commercial-free later on this afternoon, but for now, you will... you'll be able to find it on the KCNR site and share it with a friend. I mean, it's really, this information is important, and it's not always, it just isn't actually being discussed in our mainstream media. They don't talk about the whole story, and they're not giving people enough information to make really good decisions. So before we closed out the last hour, we were talking about the social credit score idea in China. And lest you think it could never happen here, I'm sure, I don't know. In China, did they think that was going to happen, Eureka?
In China or in the U.S.?
In China. I mean, when that started happening, did people... I mean, was it a surprise to anyone?
There was a saying in China, like a frog was thrown into a pot, and the water wasn't really boiling. It wasn't really boiling, but eventually, as like the fire kept like burning underneath the pot, eventually the frog, it would be too late for the frog to jump out. So there are people are already realizing that, and some they stayed away. They're rather smart. They stayed away from like any sensitive topics. But there are those people who took cues from Hong Kong people. They said, if this generation of ours do not stand up, then we're pretty much leaving it to our children to stand up. That's why the kids, like in their only 12-year-old, 18-year-old, 21-year-old, they're like wearing masks and to brave tear gas cannons. And so a large population of Chinese people, especially among intellectuals, they started posting their dissenting views on these social medias. So that's why, as dangerous as apps like WeChat could be, I still have it installed on one of my phones. I have several phones. I have it installed on one of my phones, and I started looking into posts, and they are trying to post. One was really touching. One thing I see it because it got like retweeted. Again, the Twitter is not an app that Chinese could use, so it's their equivalent of Twitter. Got retweeted. They said when future generations, like when your grandkids ask you what you did, when was the suffocating pressure from the authoritarian government, what did you do in defense of freedom, in defense of yourself, freedom of yourself and the freedom of your future, your posterities? He said, I retweeted the facts. So I every few days I saw this got retweeted. And these people under, we have like former Soviet Union that went into history's dustbin ahead of other communist regimes. There are very few. China, I believe, is the stronghold. And then in China, there are these intellectuals. They kept alerting people. If, for example, the word is being censored, like June 4th, that's when the government rolled out tanks, right, to crack down on peaceful students. When June 4th was blocked, if you tweet something with June 4th in it, the whole tweet wouldn't go out. So people would say, May 35th. So it was the 35th day after the beginning.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, the algorithm didn't pick that one up.
Right. Then there's also the 8x8, 8 squared, which is 64. So there are all these. And then there are those who wouldn't be able to voice so flatly. They would say, like Mike Pompeo made a good point that it is the ruling party, not the Chinese people, right? It's the ruling party is being really confrontational toward the United States, and it is the Hong Kong, like the police, it's not the Hong Kong people. So Secretary Pompeo is starting to differentiate the ruling party and Chinese people. Then people in China, they had difficulty tweeting this. So what they could tweet is, they would tweet China's foreign ministry spokesman who were like attacking Mike Pompeo. So they would quote him saying, U.S. Secretary of State was trying to sow discord among our party and our people. When he is against our party, he is against the entire Chinese people. So by retweeting foreign ministry spokesperson's comment, people would think, oh, what did U.S. Secretary of State said? They would go dig out, and basically they would know now where U.S. where U.S. is standing, whether they are in support of Hong Kong protests or they are not. So there are ingenious ways that they are trying to spread facts and spread the news.
That's pretty cool, actually. Now, the recent support from the Trump administration for the protesters in Hong Kong, does that information make it into China?
Yes, yes, it does. And because the government is suppressing free flow of information, I think it has side effects. And then there were rumors. Rumors in China, in social media groups. And it is much more detrimental than if the government allowed free flow of information. Basically, they're saying U.S. is not only supporting Hong Kong, China retaliated by not allowing U.S. U.S. military vessels, military ships, to get supplies in Hong Kong. Right? Then it was circulated in Chinese social media within China, saying like U.S. military ships are gonna stop by Taiwan ports, are gonna pay visits to Taiwan. Then what you're gonna do? So there were all these rumors circulating, and they were saying like one U.S. aircraft carrier, probably USS Ford, I just saw it in social media, because these are not like, I did not go verify these. I know these most of these are rumors, but it also showed the sentiment. They're saying U.S. Vessels and aircrafts are like a gathering in South China Sea, and they're going to tear down military facilities established on those man-made islands. So if you block information, then rumors would take over.
Right.
So. Sure, and it also makes your information a lot more, you know, I mean, when you realize that you're being lied to or told half-truths or whatever, I mean, we're human, you know. I think the human response is, else are they lying about? It makes you want to go, maybe it was something you didn't even care about, but now you kind of want to know. I think I understand how that would backfire on people. I'm curious, when we come back, actually, I guess we have to take another quick break. You know, capitalism is wonderful, but it really interrupts our show a lot. God love them, but, you know, it's like, darn it.
It also keeps our show going. We get financed.
That's
exactly.
Right.
Exactly. It's a give and take thing. But it's like, oh, man, again, time for a break? I told you we'd run out of time. We always do. Anyway, we'll be back with our guest, Eureka Young. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
So take my word, that's what you said, but who are we to know?
I can't do everything, but I can try. And as I roll along, I begin to find things aren't always just what they seem. I wanna turn the whole thing upside down. I'll find the things they say just can't be found. I'll share this love I'll find with everyone.
Alrighty, and we're back. So, are there things actually that we haven't even discussed yet? You're thinking, gee, they ought to know. Yeah.
Yeah, I think.
I know you kind of had a list, and unfortunately, I stayed up really late and didn't really read the list this morning as closely as I should have.
Yep. Since about like 3-4 years ago, since President Trump took office, I believe the U.S. Got much clearer on its position toward the assertive policies of Beijing's new generation of leaders, and this helped this helped send a clear signal to those hardliners in Beijing that it is not wise to challenge universal values. It's not wise to suppress your own people. And the time has come that for the 7 million Hong Kong people to voice their aspiration for freedom. And it is also time for us who are overseas to voice our support for aspirations of all Chinese. And in this way, we are actually helping avoid escalation of a confrontation between the two countries. So the hardliners would think again whether they really want to send armed police, want to send People's Liberation Army across the river and to really crack down in Hong Kong as they did in Tiananmen Square 30 years ago. And because of the bipartisan support, the wide support among American people, I believe Beijing more or less got the signal, learned that United States would stand firm, and in its trade negotiation, this could be seen in the oscillation of Beijing when it is engaged with the United States in trade negotiation. In beginning of May, Beijing reneged on 150-plus pages of agreement. And then in June, it came out with a white paper. And in the white paper on tariffs, on trade negotiation, it clearly said that it is a prerequisite that the U.S. should remove all additional tariffs imposed on Chinese exports. And it maintained this position since June the 2nd when the white paper came out through mid-November when the Hong Kong police were besieging Polytechnic University in Hong Kong. But in the past few days, China's Commerce Department, they changed their tones. And they tuned down a little bit. They said the Chinese side considers that the tariffs need to be lowered for us to reach an agreement. So it no longer said
says
that
no
tariff. This is a prerequisite. And it says it's only China's view that this should be lowered rather than completely removed. So it is getting the signal that there's a strong opposition against the authoritarian rule, not only in the United States, but also in Europe, in recent NATO summit, and also within China. So I think by voicing our support for people in Hong Kong and people within China for diverging views and dissenting views, we are actually helping avoiding further escalation of conflicts.
Now, as far as Hong Kong goes, the CCP is kind of silently cracking down on the protesters, aren't they?
Yes, I think they were not able to openly declare a curfew or send troops. I think the longer it drags on, the more divided within the leadership would become. And before June 4th, 30th anniversary of June 4th, Secretary Pompeo said that the United States urges the Chinese government to make a full public accounting of those killed or missing to give comfort to the many victims of this dark chapter of history. And in Hong Kong, if the current leadership rolls out tanks as the previous administration did in 1989, and even without rolling out tanks, I believe there are numerous accounts of a missing and the death and the so-called suicide cases.
Right.
All these need to be accounted for. So I believe people, the outside the world, together with people in Hong Kong, we really need keep our pressure on, and this would help diffuse the crackdown and try to help the CCP not to make the suicidal decision.
Right.
And it is not only going to hurt people in Hong Kong. It's going to hurt its own regime, which is it is worried most. So I hope things wouldn't really deteriorate
right.
further.
Well, this our current administration, President Trump, is really the first president in a long time that has actually stood up to China and not backed down. And so do you think that's where they're having a little bit of trouble reading him or figuring out if this is for real or you know what I'm saying? They don't know. They don't know him. They know he's playing kind of hardball, but it looks like his strategy is starting to work.
Yes, I agree, and I think they did see President Trump as a very tough leader, and they still overestimated, because in China it is ruled by the by seniority and by the hierarchy, and they are not used to listening to the people or listening to dissenting views. So that's why once they made the decision, it would take a long time before they could realize they made a mistake. And in the past 3-4 years, because of the concentration of power in Secretary General Xi Jinping's hand, and those more outspoken officials and the more spoken intellectuals have been silenced, so he had even fewer channels to get this kind of helpful feedback. And by speaking out, like for people in Hong Kong and like us overseas, by voicing our opinion and our views, this would help them to understand better that President Trump, and together with his cabinet and with his team and with American public, where we stand. Mm-hmm. And this would help Secretary General Xi Jinping not to make make terrible judgment and not really to make himself carry out things that he would be held accountable.
Right. And the Chinese leadership, I mean, they always play the long game. I mean, they can outweigh anybody. In this trade situation, that has more of an immediate impact on the economy in China. And does that
raise the stakes at all?
Yeah, it does. Yeah, I think it doesn't that raise the stakes. I mean, they can't. I mean, it's going to hurt them a lot more than I think it'll hurt the U.S. trade-wise when you consider all the Chinese imports that come to the U.S. I mean, if those were to be cut off, I would imagine.
And how did they explain that?
Yeah, they would rapidly run out of funds.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And China's economy, despite the gleaning cities they built up, the coastal cities, and it was primarily driven by investment and by exports and by some they built like a super bullet, right? This kind of a highway, like a railway,
mm-hmm.
and high-speed railway.
Well, like the kind that we just talked about.
Yeah, they had to align these with military and strategic goals in order to get the project going, and they had been overextended for decades, and now is the time for reckoning, and this time has come, and also due to the lack of a feedback loop, they didn't realize how bad things are. They didn't realize how bad things had already been a few years ago. So now the economy is slowing down. People are saying like they could no longer maintain 6% growth, and they could do only 4%. Even this 4%, there was plenty waste and plenty of bloating numbers, like kind of exaggeration in it.
Mm-hmm.
And with the export being like there's barrier to China's exports, and then there's also this depletion of its foreign reserve. So the government is really put between a rock and a hard place. If it continues on this confrontation against the rest of the world, and it really couldn't sustain itself economically.
Sure. And then they would have to explain why that was happening, and all the stories that they've told, again, fall apart. When we come back, we've got to take a quick break, but when we come back, I'd like to know how much of a how much do you think they are listening to people inside China versus how much are they looking at the out, you know, from the outside looking in? I mean, are they, that feedback loop you talked about, I'm curious how large a role you think that plays in their decision making. Because if you're in a place where no one dissents or no one's allowed, I mean, it'd be pretty easy to think that you were awesome and had all the right ideas. And we all know how that usually ends in history. But tell us more about that when we come back. You're listening to We the People. You can find us online at wethepeopleradio.us.
You have to learn to pace yourself. Pressure. You're just like everybody else. Pressure. You've only had to run so far, so good. But you will come to a place where the only thing you feel are loaded guns in your face, and you'll have to deal with pressure.
I held firm to what I felt was right, like a rock. Like a rock, I was strong as I could be. Like a rock, nothing ever got to me. Like a rock, I was something to see. Like a rock.
Kind of a ode to the protesters. There are a lot of people paying a pretty high price for this change that the people in China are seeking. But I'm curious, the leadership, does it just listen in its own echo chamber, and do they figure that they know best and they've got it handled? Because as far as, you know, I mean, if I was going to think in recent history, you know, the last 100, 200 years, that's always where they make the mistake.
Yeah.
They think they've got it all nailed down. And
yeah, it doesn't look like they really care what their own people think. They come up with their own.
Yeah, they've got
strategy.
It all handled, and everybody's going to do what they say. What do you think on this? Is this another instance of that, or are they more clever than
I
that?
I agree. They do. They always overestimate the power they have in hand, and they always underestimate public opinion or public consensus. But they do, though, pay close attention to the position the United States government takes. And in the past between 40 and 50 years, throughout the interaction between the Chinese government and the U.S. government, there has never been a group of any faction in China that dared to challenge the United States ever survived. That faction always lost.
Mm-hmm.
So the track record is there. And I think Secretary General Xi Jinping is smart enough to look at the record, and he could start. He was thinking that he could, he exceeded in terms of grandeur, exceeded his predecessors. He is on par with Chairman Mao. But even in Chairman Mao's day, Chairman Mao looked into building a connection with the United States, and Chairman Mao understood the primary threat came from former Soviet Union. And during Mao's final years, which coincided with the Cultural Revolution, there were two leading factions. One was by Premier Zhou Enlai, which is the more practical faction. Then there's also the Gang of Four, led by Madame Mao. Those two factions, Mao was playing a balancing game. He allowed both factions to engage with U.S. delegation. So in the banquet, it's always Premier Zhou Enlai. Then there's also Madame Mao. They always both attended receptions. And however, Premier Zhou was educated in his youth. He went study overseas in France and Germany, I believe, in both countries, and he had connections with the young Soviet Union, and also he had been running foreign affairs ministry since the founding of the communist rule, and he was more suave and more diplomatic when dealing with Western dignitaries, while Madame Mao was more blunt. He even challenged Richard Nixon. Why did you come here earlier? It was really blunt, and I got that from Richard Nixon's memoir. And when I enrolled in college, so between these two factions, eventually the Gang of Four they were all arrested within a month after Mao's death, and then after then there came the second generation leadership, Deng Xiaoping, who was proposing for opening up, but he was fairly authoritarian in terms of political reform. He didn't advocate for political reform alongside economic reform. In economic field, he proposed for more opening up and more reform. Well, there's another leader about the same seniority, Chen Yun, and he was more conservative, even trying to go back to a command economy. So Deng got support from the United States, so his policy carried through. And then after that, there were several more generations of Chinese leaders, and they understood the diplomatic relationship between China and the U.S. was the number one foreign relationship, the most important relationship in terms of China's dealing with the rest of the world. So they always paid attention to that. And that is why they always thought their embassy people and their diplomats and always sought a state visit. They always wanted that status when head of state of China visited the United States.
Right.
While the United States did not always want to grant them such status. So they always thought that. They would rather give up some economic gains. They would pay for their ticket to get this preferential treatment so that when they returned from the United States, they would be able to tell their colleagues that I'm the one who set China-U.S. relationship on course, and I had the backing of the strongest country in the world, and so as to intimidate adversaries within the party. And now with this Secretary General Xi Jinping, and he thought through a series of propaganda, right, through CCTV, like the controlled state-run television and all that, he thought he was so powerful, he is so dominating, and he listened not a word from what people in Hong Kong are saying, what people in Xinjiang are saying. And then he thought he could even challenge the United States. And then within communist leadership, I believe, if you pay attention or watch news from China, not a single Chinese official has come out to say, like, we really need a crackdown on Hong Kong. It's always either Xi Jinping or the executive Hong Kong administration or, like, a spokesperson in the foreign ministry. There is hardly, see, where is the prime minister, right? Where is vice prime minister who are running, like, Hong Kong and Macau and Taiwan affairs? They never came out. So I believe Xi Jinping is quite isolated if he really wants to go against, like, really face up the United States. Mm-hmm. And also in this party hierarchy, China has a long history, like at least 2,000 years of imperial rule. And this hierarchy of officials, they are fairly sophisticated. When they want to sabotage somebody, they do not come out as, like, we people online were more outspoken, saying, hey, you should not crack down in Hong Kong. We say that. But these officials, they are much more sophisticated than us. They will carry out the crackdown much worse than even Secretary General Xi Jinping would expect, to stir up hatred and discontent among people, among, like, among Western countries in the West. So this is their way of sabotaging Xi Jinping by overdoing it. So I believe Xi Jinping is now facing challenges all over, within the Chinese leadership and among the Chinese population and in Hong Kong and as well as in the world. So he's really in a tough spot, and he really should come back to recognize the values that Chinese shared by people in Hong Kong and people in the United States, in the free world. And fundamentally, these values are also shared by people in China. They're hardworking, right? They are intelligent, and sure. They want economic freedom, and they all know that economic freedom is not secured unless they have political freedom. They have a freedom of speech, freedom of assembly. So it is really a time for Chinese leadership to realize, by going against the United States, you are really isolating yourself, not from the Chinese people, but also from those peers within the leadership. That's why we see very few people coming out. There's another case, another convention passed down since at least the Cultural Revolution days. When there is a demonstration in Hong Kong, those neighboring provinces, like two or three, like across from the Taiwan Strait, on the mainland, their party bosses in those provinces, neighboring across the river from Hong Kong, it is a grand opportunity for them to voice support, to send armies over to crack down on Hong Kong. Then that would open up the door, that they would have a shortcut into Xi Jinping's inner circle. But not a single party boss at provincial level has stood up to voice their support of this hardliner's policy.
Right.
So this is how isolated, like,
we see through our really limited lens here. I would be, I'll be curious when we come back, talk to us a little bit about how the technology, since you work obviously in that industry, but even, I mean, everybody deals with technology anymore, whether you want to or not, but how much of a game changer is that? Because previous dictators and authoritarian regimes didn't, I mean, there wasn't the information flow that there is now. And I'd be curious to hear your take on that. We'll be right back. You're listening to We the People. You can join us online at wethepeopleradio.us.
My own decision. It's my prerogative. I can to do what I want to do.
It's my life.
Can you live my life?
It's my life.
I'll be doing it just for you.
It's my life. It's
tell me, why can't I live my life with all of the things that people say?
We're back. Okay, so the technology influence. I mean, it can only help, I would think, this time around.
You mean help the authoritarian rulers to hold on to power, or
correct,
help protesters to disseminate information?
I'm kind of thinking help the protesters, but maybe I'm wrong.
I think I tend to agree as well. This becomes fairly philosophical regarding technology advancement. Before we had a computer, we thought there is so much information to gather in the economy, and state planning wouldn't work. We need a free economy. So then there came out computers, then came out big data, and then the people, especially those working in an authoritarian government, they will think now we are master of the universe. We have all the information, all the input for decision making. So they become more and more arrogant and more detached. And this is how China has built up its huge amount of debt. I think their numbers saying it's 300% of GDP, and it's not even counting in the off balance sheet, like those kind of hidden debt. And it also has sowed so much social discontent among disadvantaged social groups. And but at the same time, it could, if an authoritarian regime becomes a dominant player in certain area, if countries like Britain, Germany, they are not alert enough to invasive devices, right, that cuts into their infrastructure of communication, then they would really be handicapped in this game. And there have been reports that diplomats from South Korea or from other countries, they fell into traps of like corruption, bribery, and whining and dining and all that. They fell into these traps. Then they were forced to work for Chinese government, and they in the end some committed suicide.
Wow!
So with sophisticated technology equipment, tech equipment, it would really harm these countries if they are not alert. And I believe the awareness that you're raising at the We the People Radio, try to let people be on guard. And I think the authoritarian rule has not crossed the tipping point that it could pull down the United States. But it is also important that we do stay alert. And for people, for the social media groups in China, they are able to get information from overseas and disseminate within China, although they are putting their lives on the line. It's very risky. But at the same time, people are realizing maybe authoritarian rule wouldn't last. So people are setting the stage for the post-authoritarian era in China
as well. In recognizing that that the relationship between China and the U.S. is very important to China's economy. How do you see their relationship with Russia developing in the near future? One of the things I've heard some of the pundits talk about is if Russia and China ever got together, the United States would be sunk. Do you ever, or do you feel that, that's something that would ever happen?
It is a game that China likes to play, but the Russia is more cool-headed. And there was this video that Secretary General Xi Jinping went to Russia to attend a summit. I'll have to dig it out and get a link to you. And Vladimir Putin was after the forum. Both Secretary General Xi and President Putin were guest speakers. They stood up and they chatted with hosts. President Putin was engaged in a lengthy talk with a really attractive female anchor who hosted the forum, while leaving President Xi Jinping aside without even turning around or talking to him. And President Xi had to turn around to shake hands with people off the stage.
Ouch.
So he was bending down and he nearly fell off. And Associated Press had a footage about 1 minute and 3 seconds. And after he was held up and pulled back and without falling by one of the bodyguards of President Putin, President Putin still ignored him for a while and then briefly shook hands with Secretary General Xi. Then he turned around and continued walking off the stage, chatting again with the attractive hostess. So I think this could be a signal that Vladimir Putin would like to send to the world, to the outside world. And also, even, again, we reveal the history between interactions between China and the United States in the past 40, 50 years, and also among these early generations of Chinese leaders, like Chairman Mao, like Deng Xiaoping, they understood the danger of former Soviet Union and today's Russia. When I was a kid, in our high school textbooks, we were taught that Russia, as an empire, it took a lot of China's land. And in our textbook, we learned that Vladimir Lenin, who was the first generation leader in the Soviet Union, Vladimir Lenin did not acknowledge these unfair treaties signed between Russian czars and the Chinese emperors. So one day these would be renegotiated. I believe it was since the third generation of China's leadership, Jiang Zemin, who turned soft on Russia and made huge concession. So China and Russia resolved all the border disputes. And what the resolution exactly was never made public. And now, but even then, I think China was, because of Chinese people's suspicion over Russia as an empire, there was not such closeness between China and Russia. And the Secretary General Xi Jinping was the first leader, was openly bragging about his close relationship with Putin. And I think it is not very much welcome within China, within the leadership, and it could pose temporary distraction to the U.S., but I don't think it would materialize. Though, in short term, if there is military skirmishes between China and the United States, for example, in South China Sea or across the Taiwan Strait, alliance between China and Russia would be detrimental to U.S. national interest. So it is something that we need to keep an eye on, but it is also something that I don't think Chinese people would really go for a closer relationship with Russia than
with Russia.
A good relationship with the United States.
Right. Oh, yeah, it's definitely in their interest to keep communications and a good relationship with the U.S. There's not a lot to be gained by, developing a cozy relationship with Russia other than militarily, which China really, I don't think, needs. When you look at the size of both militaries, China can take care of itself. But economically, their relationship with the U.S. is pretty important. So,
yes.
Wow. Well, this has been illuminating, as always. We always, you guys have so much good information for us, and we would be happy to speak with any of your friends with information, and I'm sure we'll chat with you again.
I look forward to that.
Thanks very much.
Really,
our guest has been Eureka Young. You can find the archive of the program at wethepeopleradio.us.
Wide awake, the fever burns. Sweat it out, wait my turn.
Can you hear the drumming? There's a revolution coming.
All this doubt is creeping in, inside out.